to see me, now here's a surprise. I know that you have, cause there's magic in my eyes. I can see for miles and miles and miles and miles and miles.
Oh yeah. Hello friends, this is Out of This World Radio and Television with your host Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW in Bellevue, Washington, on 1150 AM, just outside Seattle in the United States here in North America. The program focuses on out-of-this-world information, including psychic phenomena, UFOs, metaphysics, and predictions for the coming years in Seattle, the United States, and beyond. The purpose of this program is to raise consciousness and make this planet a far better and much happier place. And I know that with everyone's help, we'll do it. Out of This World Radio is the fastest-growing spiritual, psychic, and UFO radio program in the world, with listeners in over 70 countries, and I guarantee today's show will be really out of this world. For today's program, during the first hour, I'll be interviewing United States Air Force Colonel Billy Fay Woodard, who was the base commander of Area 51 in Nevada during the late 1960s. His background and where he was from and what he saw at Area 51 will be truly out of this world. During the second hour, from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m., I'll be interviewing Colonel Woodard's father, whose name is Zora from the Hollow Earth. Zora will be giving important messages to humanity from the inner Earth and the bright, beautiful future for all of us. This is one interview that you will not want to miss. Actually, his father's interview, is in two parts. The first part will be the second hour from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time, followed by on April 8th from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. I wanted to tell everyone, on April 5th, I'll be up in Vancouver interviewing Edward Snowden at his event at Simon Fraser University. He'll be connected by Skype directly from Moscow to Vancouver, and there'll be a lot of people asking questions. I'll be one of them. If you have any questions you'd like to ask Mr. Snowden, please email them to me to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. His interview and the information that he goes over at the interview on April 5th will be the basis for my first hour program on April 8th from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. One of the things I wanted to tell you is that Zoro will be talking about during this second hour from 3 to 4 p.m. is Fukushima. And he talks about how advanced civilizations, not only from the Galactic Alliance, but also from the inner Earth, are cleaning up Fukushima. I say this because on my Facebook page several days ago, some friends in Japan posted actual UFOs flying over Fukushima, and I'm told by my benevolent ET friends that these were UFOs from benevolent advanced humans, and they were actually cleaning up Fukushima as we speak. One of the things that I will always emphasize on my program is that we are beautiful spiritual creatures, and we have a very, very bright future. This is why I always emphasize the positive, and I disagree with radio programs like Coast to Coast, which unfortunately sometimes seem to dwell on the negative. For example, Coast to Coast had a show last night in which they discussed Fukushima, but it was very negative, and they failed to mention that much of the radiation around Fukushima and in the Pacific Ocean has been and is being cleaned up by the Galactic Alliance, and there have been actual scientific tests to prove this, done by the state of California and others. I want to let everybody know that we're getting a lot of help, but I also want to let everyone know that it's our responsibility to play a part in this cleanup by asking for help from the Galactic Alliance. We can do this very simply with this prayer that Dr. Moto used to say. I'd like to ask everyone around the world to please say this prayer three times, and when you say it, please send love and light to Fukushima and to Japan and to the wonderful Emoto Peace Project and the director, Michiko Hayashi, who are doing truly wonderful work to make this world a better place and clean up Fukushima. The prayer goes like this, and if you could say it three times with me, I'd really appreciate it. Water, we are sorry. Water, please forgive us. Water, we love you. And water, we thank you. Again, water, we are sorry. Water, please forgive us. Water, we love you. And water, we thank you. One more time. Water, we are sorry. Water, please forgive us. Water, we love you. And water, we thank you. Thank you so much for saying this. If you'd like to help, please visit the Emoto Peace Project website at www.emotopeaceproject.net and make a donation. They do wonderful work, and I know your support will be really appreciated. Out of This World Radio is a nonprofit program supported entirely by donations. And for those who'd like to donate, please go to the donate button at the upper right-hand corner of the program webpage at www.outofthisworld1150.com and just click on it. I want to thank everyone for their wonderful donations and support, especially Judith in California, Marie and Alan on Camino Highland, and everyone around the world who helped me raise consciousness and make this planet a better place. I'd also like to thank the many sponsors of this show, including the Orion Tech Computers of Bend, Oregon. And we're looking for more sponsors and advertisers. Any advertising on the program will have a worldwide audience for your goods and services, because I know with everyone's help, we can and will make this planet a much better and much happier place. I truly think that we are all powerful spiritual beings and that our future is very bright. I'd also like to thank the many wonderful sponsors of this show, including my dear friend Carol, who has been designing my website and providing wonderful support. My friends Michiko Hayashi, Hiro Emoto, Mrs. Emoto, and Dr. Yasu Nimoto of the Emoto Peace Project and Emoto Office in Tokyo, Japan. The Galactic Alliance, who've been supporting my show and my angelic and earthly family, as well as my wonderful sound engineers Rachel and Eric, and my station manager, Eric Krima, without whose help and support this program would not have been possible. I've started a new spiritual mentoring program for those interested in getting in touch with the past people who've passed on, loved ones who've passed on, and to develop their psychic gifts. Please email me or call me. My email is outofthisworld1150@gmail.com, and I can be also reached in the United States at phone number 509-750-9793. Before we go on to our first guest, I'd like to mention some important upcoming events. I've had many things planned for this year, but two most important events I'd like to mention is the first. It is Saturday, April 2nd, tomorrow as we speak in Tokyo, Japan. And the world-famous Jerry Pollack, he's one of the world's most famous water scientists of the University of Washington, will be speaking in Tokyo later today. For my many listeners in Japan, if you'd like to attend his lecture, please contact the Emoto office in Tokyo for tickets or email them at hiromasa@hado.com. That's hiromasa@hado.com. Also, on June 8, 2016, Michiko Hayashi, the Global Director and Ambassador of the Emoto Peace Project in Tokyo, Japan, will be giving a very special presentation and water ceremony at the Artesian Springs in downtown Olympia at 5 p.m. She'll be dedicating a permanent memorial to Dr. Masaru Emoto's 2010 visit to the springs. The event is free, and I hope you can all attend. Then from June 10th to June 12th, 2016, I will be having my second annual Galactic Wisdom Conference in Olympia, Washington, just off of exit 111 on Interstate 5. For those familiar with numbers, 111 is an angelic number. We will have many wonderful speakers, including Scott Lemriel of the Galactic Alliance, who've been a contactee with the Galactic Alliance for the past 55 years. Gordon Asher Davidson, an author and contactee of the Galactic Alliance, coming in from San Francisco. Michiko Hayashi, of course, coming in from Tokyo. Shirichio Yoshi Inuchi, I hope I pronounced that right. I usually just call him Mr. Yoshi. He's a famous Japanese therapist and Hado expert of the Dr. Emoto office in Tokyo, Japan. Myself included will be there. Garnet Schulheiser, a famous Canadian psychic from British Columbia. Carolyn White, a renowned chakra healer, a psychic healer. Teresa Carroll, a well-known Seattle psychic. Randy Kramer, who was with the Secret Space Program and lived on the planet Mars for 17 years, will also be there and be giving a very special presentation on Saturday night. You'll be able to meet him in person. And Alfred Weber, he's a famous Canadian lawyer and a UFO expert, will also be attending. I'm not sure whether it'll be by Skype or in person. He lives up in Vancouver. But the cost is only $197 per person for the weekend through May 1st. And after May 1st, the price will go up about $247. The one-day admission is $97 per person. And if you're a student or low income, please give me a call at 509-750-9793 or email me at outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. And the location will be at the Washington Lanyard Harbor, an event center at 9101 Stillicum Road, Southeast in Olympia, Washington, 98513. If you'd like more information, please visit our website at www.galacticwisdomconference.com. And I hope you can all come. I'd like to go on to our first guest, retired United States Air Force Colonel Billy Fay Woodard. During this interview, he will tell about his life story, Era 51, and give messages for humanity on the outer Earth. This interview should be truly out of this world, and for information, if you'd like to look up his background, his website is www.hollowearthnetwork.com. If this is a pre-recorded interview I did with him last week, if we run out of time to play the entire interview, I'll just continue it on another program. So please stay tuned, and we'll play that interview now.
Hello, Billy. Thank you so much for coming on today. I'm so appreciate you giving me this wonderful interview. Is your wife there too?
Well, she's my companion. She's
your companion? Your companion there too, please?
Yes, she is.
Wonderful. And what's her name?
Her name is Jane.
Jane. Hello, Jane. How are you doing today?
I'm good, Ted.
Good. Good. Well, I'm so pleased to have you both on. Billy, I have to ask you, your father's name is Zora, Z-O-R-R-A, and Could you tell me a little bit about your background? I mean, you have an unusual background that I don't run into people normally with.
The unusual background? Yeah, I would say I have an unusual background. Well, first off, in order to relay my past, I need to go back to the past of another individual that was well known in history, and that is Admiral Richard Evelyn Byrd. In 1947, he flew an aircraft into an opening at the North Polar region.
Could you please speak up, by the way?
Yeah. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now better.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Admiral Richard Evelyn Byrd flew in an aircraft, a DC-3, into the opening at the North Polar region and traversed a landmass that was much greater in size than the United States. But it was beyond the pole. It was interesting because he flew into this opening and on inside, and he noticed that the sun never moved that he was looking at, which was actually the core of your planet. The core of your planet is a gaseous ball 600 miles across. It is not a molten core. Your planet doesn't have a molten core.
Fascinating.
It's hollow. And the out through the polar openings, north and south, we have a reflection of the central sun shining out through the polar openings, reflects off of ice crystals known as crystalline, reflects back to the Earth as a halo of light. That creates the aurora borealis, which is also known as the southern lights in Antarctica.
Fascinating.
So that's where that glow comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And so it contradicts all the other explanations, such as electrical, as reflection from the sun, and all this.
And weather balloons, that's what the U.S. government called Roswell weather balloon.
And,
yeah, sure.
None of that, right? So,
hello?
I'm here.
Okay, please continue.
A little bit of something to wet my whistle here.
All right, go ahead.
So going back to that point, Admiral Byrd made contact with a population inside. And
fascinating.
While he was there,
That's fascinating.
Yes, while he was there, he made contact with the population there, and they took him to see the Council of Twelve. Mm-hmm. Inside Hollow Earth, of which my father is the leader of that, the spokesperson.
Fascinating.
I was present at that meeting too. When Admiral Byrd walked into the chamber, so that kind of gives away my age.
Well, you don't sound a day over 19, but go ahead.
A day over 19.
Right.
Well, in Hollow Earth, I'm considered a teenager, but on the surface, I've got 64 trips around the sun.
I see.
However, if you multiply, add that to my Hollow Earth age would be 1864. So that's how old I really am.
You are actually 1,864 years old. Really?
I am.
That's fascinating. My goodness.
Yes.
Well, wow.
But on the surface, of course, I'm only 64 years old.
Right, Right. Okay.
And when after the meeting took place with Admiral Byrd, they gave him a message to bring back to the surface. And the message was, it's a three-part message. The first part was that the Hollow Earth exists and there's actual civilization inside there. Mm-hmm. And the second part was medical. He was given a set of vials, test tube things, and and each one of those test tubes was the cure to every known disease on the planet at that time. And there was cures for all of them, which include cancer and leukemia, all this stuff. And the third part was to cease and desist from using nuclear weapons, nuclear power.
Interesting.
Atomic power.
Mm-hmm.
And because, see, in Hollow, the Hollow Earth receives a lot of its air from the two openings at the North and South Pole.
Interesting.
And when, if there was to be, if there was a, say, a nuclear war, mm-hmm. then that poisonous air would eventually end up in Hollow Earth.
Interesting.
So they would, they're stressing for the surface people not to use it because it has dire consequences.
Sure. Wow.
And but of course they just basically ignored that and went on doing what they're doing.
Right.
But so me and my sister, he came back to the surface and they shut him up. They told him he cannot talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
He can't talk about his experience. He cannot give the information he was given. And even the vials of that were the cures were right. locked away.
Really? Wow.
In the basement of the Smithsonian Institute.
Yeah, figures.
So all of this was, he was shut up. They told him, you must remain silent on behalf of humanity.
Hmm.
So that was the reason that me and my sister were brought to the surface. Now, when we were brought to the surface, we were asked, before we came to the surface, we were asked if we would volunteer to go to the surface.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we jumped at the chance because we wanted to, experience the surface.
Okay.
But we also had to have our bodies altered.
Mm.
Understand, inside, the gravity is much less than it is on the surface.
Okay.
So you grow taller.
Hmm. Fascinating.
Put it this way, if you were, let's say you weighed 150 pounds out here,
mm-hmm.
you would only weigh a third of that in there.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were like, my height was around 13 foot.
My goodness, wow.
And my sister as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had to have our bodies shrunk.
Wow.
To the size of toddlers,
uh-huh.
and brought to the surface and deposited on the surface. Now we were brought to a park in Wichita Falls, Texas, and we were deposited there in a they call them the white elephants. What they are is a big square garbage cans
mm-hmm.
for the parks,
mm-hmm.
which were given to them by the Air Force base there.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so we were deposited me and my sister on top of the garbage inside one of those receptacles.
How old in Earth years were you? Or were you just babies?
We were toddlers.
Toddlers.
Age.
Okay.
So I would say maybe what? Three to four.
Wow.
Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were. There, and of course we were discovered by the park maintenance people and a policeman.
Mm-hmm.
So what they did was they took us from the dumpster and turned us over to the county orphanage.
Uh-huh.
In that town.
Mm-hmm.
And we were there for a period of time, and we didn't speak any English. We spoke to each other with telepathy.
Fascinating.
And we didn't speak the language, so therefore they put us away, locked us up in the attic room, up in the attic under lock and key.
Attic room.
With a radio and a TV, which had a real small black and white screen on mm-hmm. a big square box.
Wow.
And we would look at that and we would listen to the radio. And that's how we learned the English language.
What year was this, approximately?
That was in 1951.
51. Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
That was 1951.
Mm-hmm.
So we learned the English language by listening to their broadcasting.
Okay.
And then shortly after that, we started talking. But before we started talking, I mean, we would... They didn't understand us. They didn't understand who we were,
right.
where we came from, because everything that they did to test us went against everything they believed in.
Sure, sure.
So
makes sense.
You know, biologically, and of course, you know, the tests were given whenever a child comes into a orphanage. There are always blood tests and all this other stuff.
Right.
And of course, they took the blood test, and the blood test was confounded. So, and of course, even in my years in the military, it was another confounding there as well. But so we went ahead, and we were adopted by an Air Force family.
Uh huh. Uh huh.
And. The reason we were adopted was due to an incident that took place just before we were adopted. And what took place was there was this child that was missing in the Yellowstone Park. And we were listening to the radio, the broadcast of this child missing. And me and my sister looked at each other, we closed our eyes, and we visualized where this child was.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And we wrote down on the pad and pencil that they gave us. We wrote down the longitude and latitude location where this child was.
Wow.
And we gave it to the staff, and mm-hmm. they in turn contacted Yellowstone Park, the ranger station, and gave them the coordinates where the child was.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, one that received the coordinates was an American Indian ranger. And he went to that location, and it turns out it was in the cave of a Sasquatch.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
And because they said that that's 10 miles from the search area. How could a child that young go 10 miles?
Sure.
And obviously, the Sasquatch picked up the child and mm-hmm. took it to its lair.
Right. Wow.
So, and the... ranger went in there, and the Sasquatch stood up, handed the child to the ranger,
mm-hmm.
and the ranger brought the child back to his home, to his parents.
Fascinating. Wow.
So that was the reason we were adopted shortly after that.
Wow.
By this Air Force family.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at that time, the Air Force would pay people, enlisted people, extra money for additional children.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm.
So we were basically an asset, not a loved situation.
Oh no. Mm.
So we were an asset more than anything
uh-huh,
else.
Uh-huh.
That's why we were adopted. But shortly after we were adopted, my adopted father separated me and my sister because his excuse was that we can't afford to keep you both, so we're going to send one back to the orphanage.
Oh, too bad.
However, that's not what happened. Hmm. What was told to me by my adopted father was a lie, and my adopted mother told me the next day what happened. He sold my sister. Sold her.
Sold her? Oh, my God.
Sold her mm-hmm. for $1 million to another Air Force family.
Oh, my God.
So that's how we were separated.
Wow.
And so now we were going to jump forward now from there.
Okay.
I was growing up in elementary school mm-hmm. and junior high, actually, I was told to go to the high school, mm-hmm. to where my adopted brother was, and he was getting ready to graduate. So I sat in the back of the class waiting for him to finish his tests. And this person brought up, this kid walked over and dropped a bunch of papers on my desk. I looked at them. I knew the answers, so I went ahead and answered the questions.
Mm-hmm.
And when it came graduation time for my brother, adopted brother, to graduate, I heard my name called. Of course, I didn't understand why my name was called, but he comes down, grabbed me by the arm, and says, "Come with me." Took me over behind the curtain and said, "You're Billy?" And I said, "Yes." And they said, "We have a dilemma here. You're a valedictorian."
Wow, wonderful.
Because you maxed the test.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful, wonderful.
So they said, "You're going to have to give a speech." And I said, "Oh, great." So I said, "Wait, how can I be a graduating high school when I'm still in junior high?" And they called the principal, whose son was also graduating. He was in the audience.
Uh-huh.
And they brought him up, and he asked him, "Is this one of your students?" "Yes, it is." And, "Well, we've got a problem. This person is due to graduate high school now." He said, "Well, wait a minute. He hadn't graduated junior high yet." And they said, "Well, we're going to have to." So they said, "Okay." So they what they did was, they didn't believe that I had passed this test.
Uh-huh.
So they gave me the test again.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. So I took it again.
Right.
It took me 10 minutes. I answered all the questions.
Uh-huh. Wow.
And they said, "Well, you mashed it again." And they said, "Well, okay, this kid's going to graduate. That's it." So I walked out on stage, and they gave me my graduation certificate, and then they sent me up to the podium. And the only thing I could think of was the subject of harmony.
Okay, beautiful.
So I went and talked about harmony,
mm-hmm.
and how to remain in harmony at all times.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there wasn't a dry eye in the auditorium,
mm-hmm.
but still, mm-hmm. I graduated.
Good. Wow.
At age 12, I graduated in high school.
That's amazing. That is truly amazing.
Yes,
wow.
It is.
Wow.
And shortly after that, I went to downtown to get a job, and went to the Time and Dime store to go to work.
Mm-hmm.
And filled up my application for work, and they said, "It says you're 12. And I said, "Yes." "And a high school graduate." "Yes." Okay. So they had me stocking shelves in the back.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It came time for lunchtime, and I walked next door. Next door was where the recruiting station was.
Mm-hmm.
I walk in there, and I said, "I would like to look at your military, eligibility." I understand I was 5'7",
mm-hmm.
and I was female. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I was born hermaphrodite, so
mm-hmm.
But I looked female.
Okay.
At that time.
Okay.
And I looked like a young adult woman.
Okay.
So they went ahead and had me take these tests. I took them.
Mm-hmm.
And I maxed them.
Mm, wow.
And they come back and they say, "Well, you qualify for anything and everything."
Wow. Amazing.
And I said, "Okay." And then they got to where my age was, and I had left that blank, and they said, "Oh, you forgot your age here." And I said, "Okay." So I wrote 12 in there. And he looks at it and he goes, "What?"
Hmm. How funny.
He said, "This can't be."
Right. Wow.
So he said, "I've got to call Washington." So he said, "Can you come back with your parents tomorrow?" So I did. And we brought my adopted parents in there the next day. And they had already received notification from Washington, "Get this girl in."
Okay. Great. Wow.
So, but I still had to wait because I was not the right age.
No.
So they said, "Can you wait 2 years mm-hmm. before you go in. And I said, well, of course. And mm-hmm. I went on, you know, working with the Five and Dime.
Sure.
But then when I went to basic training,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm taking the test, to blood tests and this.
Mm-hmm.
A few minutes later, when I'm sitting in the waiting room, they come out and they call my name, and they said, Woodard, and I said, yes. And they said, come with us. Mm-hmm. So I went in the room with them, and there's a whole circle of doctors mm-hmm. sitting there. And one of them looks at me and goes, where were you born?
Uh-huh.
And I said, Wichita Falls, Texas. And he said, try again. I said, why is that? He said, because your blood says different.
Okay.
I said, my blood says different.
Mm-hmm.
He says, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I said, how can my blood say different?
Mm-hmm.
He says, your blood has no type.
Wow, fascinating. Fascinating.
There's no your blood type. You don't have a blood type.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. And they said, we put it on, what's the thing called? The centrifuge.
Mm-hmm.
And they put it on for like 5 minutes. Or three minutes at first. And then they put it on for 5 minutes. And they put it on for 30 minutes. And the blood and plasma would not separate.
Wow, amazing.
So, so then that's why they asked me, where are you born?
Okay, wow.
And of course, they said, well, okay, well, we'll just, you know, dispense with that.
Mm-hmm.
And went on into the service.
Okay.
Got to Lackland Air Force Base and stepped off the bus, and this drill sergeant, female drill sergeant, walks up to me and she says, you come with me. And I said, okay. She took me into our office, which is in one of the barracks, and she says, okay, here's the deal. I know you're a born hermaphrodite, so I don't want any issues here. So you're going to be sleeping in my room instead of with the girls.
Okay.
I don't want any girls coming up pregnant.
Okay, all right.
I said, no, I don't have no issue with that.
All right, sure.
I don't have, you know, don't worry about that. So I'm going through the basic training, mm-hmm. and the girls are beginning to wonder why I'm not sleeping in the same area where they are.
Sure, sure.
Mm-hmm. And so the drill sergeant told them why, and they said, "Oh, well, we don't got a problem with that. Don't, you know, there's no issue there."
Mm-hmm.
So from that point on, I went ahead and slept in the barracks.
Uh huh.
But and then moving on. Further, I graduated basic training. I was sent to advanced training, and then from that point, at the end of the basic training, my drill sergeant saluted me because I was in line for B officer.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, I went to officer's school.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, I went to the Pentagon.
Oh, wow.
But it was interesting because before I got to the Pentagon, before I even was sent to the Pentagon,
uh-huh.
they said, do you know where you're going? I said, well, I signed up for Hawaii. They said, uh-huh. Well, you're going where we want you to go.
Mm-hmm. Okay, funny.
Despite what your letter says, you're going to where we want you to.
Uh-huh.
So they sent me to the Pentagon.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm at the Pentagon, going through my duties,
mm-hmm.
this gentleman walks in plain suit, and he walks up to me and he says, you're going to Nevada.
Hmm.
You're going to an underground facility. And but we have to promote you because no one under this rank could be there.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, okay, fine. So they open up this little box and they pull out full bird colonel.
Oh my goodness! What rank were you then?
I went from lieutenant to full bird colonel.
Wow, amazing! That's quite a jump.
That's a big jump.
That's
unheard of. Yeah, you don't do stuff like that.
My dad was a colonel in the army, but I know it took him years to get to that point, and you did it in a matter of.
Yeah, he had to go through all kinds of
stuff. Yeah,
he had to go through all kinds of boards and everything else.
Oh, absolutely.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, and I would have had to do the same thing, but because of my background,
right,
they sent me directly to Area 51.
Wow, amazing. So, okay, wow.
So they sent me to Area 51. They sent me first to Las Vegas.
Right, okay.
At Las Vegas, McCarran Air Force Base, McCarran Air... Airlines.
Billy, what year was this? Pardon me for interrupting. What year was this when you were sent there?
What?
Approximately?
The year?
Yeah, the year, Area 51.
Oh, my God. I think I've seen back on that one.
Okay. Well, your Earth year of born of 51.
Yeah, Earth year. Well, see, the reason my birth certificate is not my birth certificate.
Okay.
The birth certificate that I received was from a dead child.
Okay.
That died of bronchial pneumonia.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't have a birth certificate.
Mm, okay.
When they brought me to the orphanage, there was no record of me.
So you must have gone to Area 51 in the 60s, sometime in the 60s then, mid-60s,
yeah.
I assume. Okay.
It was late 60s, I'm sure.
Late 60s, okay.
And okay. So anyway, I went to Area 51.
Okay.
We got to Area 51. We took off from McCarran at 7 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And when we arrived and we got off the plane, it was pitch black.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, wait a minute, this can't be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we were only in the air like 54 minutes,
mm-hmm,
or a little over that.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, it's black outside. Mm-hmm. They said, you're inside a mountain. Okay, so we got out of this aircraft. We got in a staff vehicle, military staff vehicle, and it started driving, and suddenly it started dropping at a 45-degree angle down. So we went down to this first level. We stepped out of that first level.
Mm-hmm.
They would send us to the steps to go into that building over there and take everything off. Everything.
Mm-hmm.
All the way to your birthday suit. So we went in there and we had to strip down everything.
Mm.
And they put us in these white jumpsuits.
Okay.
And we entered another staff vehicle and went down, out, and then straight, then down again, another 45 degrees to another location. And from there, we had to go in there and we had to strip down again.
Mm.
And we walked into this chamber, and totally, in our birthday suits, and this mist came down over us, and we were decontaminated. We went through two processes of decontamination before we even got to our duty station. When we got to the third level down, we got out of the vehicle, and I was separated from the rest of them because they were their jobs were elsewhere.
Okay.
And they said, you're going to replace the current commander.
So you were going to be the commander of Area 51 then?
Yes.
My goodness. Okay.
So I said, okay. So I walked into this room, and here's this man sitting in this chair shaking like a leaf.
Hmm.
And he stands up, and he salutes me. I salute him. He says, I stand relieved. He said, I'm here to relieve you. He said, I stand relieved. He says, I can't wait to get out of here. He was escorted out of there under armed guard. So,
my goodness. Did he look distraught, in other words?
He was beyond distraught.
Wow.
He looked paranoid as the devil.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. So this is the late 60s.
He was visibly shaken.
Okay.
And I said, what's wrong with you? And he says, you'll find out.
Okay.
So, and the air police told him to be quiet, and they escorted him out.
Okay.
So they sent me to his office. I went and sat in his office, and there was all kinds of folders on the desk. I mean, stacks of them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going, what in the world is this?
Mm-hmm.
So I started going through these folders.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one I picked up Admiral Richard Evelyn Byrd flight log.
Interesting. Wow.
So I picked it up and I started looking at it. And I read it.
Uh-huh.
And I memorized the longitude and latitudes that were told in there.
Mm-hmm.
And continue reading, you know, his diary.
Right.
The original diary, not the one that's floating around on the internet.
Right. Okay.
But the original diary. And the one that's floating around on the internet, it talks about one point there. He says they cannot see the sun anymore.
Wow.
In actuality, it was the moon. It wasn't the sun.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because in February 19th, 1947, was pitch black in the Arctic.
Wow.
You know, it's dark up there.
Mm-hmm.
So at that time, it was dark. And when he took off from Greenland Air Base to fly north on his Arctic flight, he took off. He was in the evening hours, the morning hours of the 19th, but it was still dark.
Mm-hmm.
And because it was Arctic night. So, but the moon was shining brightly, so it was shining so bright that you could actually see the snow from the aircraft on the ground and the colorations that
right.
were on the ground.
Right.
So that's the only discrepancy with the Admiral Byrd's diary as opposed to the one on the internet.
Okay.
Just that one part where it talked about the sun, not being able to see the sun anymore. They weren't able to see the moon anymore. Because they were looking at the central sun at
mm-hmm.
that point.
Mm.
Now, going on from there, so while I'm in the Air Force, and at Area 51, I was sent down to the lower level. I was requested to go down to the lower level.
All right.
So I get in an elevator, and I go down the 27th level. There's 27 levels in Area 51.
And this is the late 60s, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, all right.
So this is, I mean, there's people want to know, well, how deep is Area 51? It's 27 levels.
Wow.
The 27th level is a level that the boring machines at the Air Force had did not they didn't dig this area out. It was already done.
Hmm.
So they basically bored into it.
Mm-hmm.
A chamber.
Okay.
And in this chamber was a shuttle station, underground shuttle. And when I got off the elevator and I walked down this corridor and air police were there with me and escorted me in. I walked up to my security and he's standing there and he says, "You were requested by name to be here." And I said, why? They said, "Follow me." So I followed my superior into this chamber and here stands these two individuals. Huge. Very, very tall.
Mm-hmm.
They looked at me and they said, "Welcome, Commander." And I said, "All right. And why am I here?" "We are taking you on a journey to a city, a subterranean city."
By the way, Billy, pardon me for interrupting,
yes.
But these two individuals, they were human?
Oh, they were human. But very tall.
Okay.
They were like 15 feet tall.
My goodness. Wow.
Okay. And this tubular type vehicle was about 30 feet tall. And it was in a tube or in a tunnel that was, you know, bored out, circular, of course, and it was almost marble smooth.
Wow.
And I said, "Okay, where are we going?" "We are taking you to Telos."
Telos.
He's Mount Shasta, California.
I've been to Telos. I was there last August.
Oh, you've been to Telos.
I was at a speaker at a UFO conference last August, last year,
yes,
at Mount Shasta, and one evening, or early one morning at about 5 a.m., I've been in touch with the Galactic Alliance for the last 2 years, and
yes,
the Inner Earth people came, and I asked to go, and they took me there, and I met with the
oh,
people.
Great.
Yeah,
great.
I've been there. I was there last August. Beautiful place.
Okay. So I was in, I boarded this vehicle. I sat down. Of course, before I got on there, my superior says, note everything you hear and see. So you can report, when you get back, debriefed. I said, okay, fine. So I went ahead and got in the craft, and the door slid very silently shut, and this thing started moving. And ahead of me was, I could see things, but on the sides, it was a blur, complete a blur. There were windows on the side, but you couldn't see because it was just a blur.
Right.
And I said, how fast are we going? I said, we will be there in 3 minutes.
My goodness. Wow.
And in 3 minutes, it stopped.
Hmm.
The door slid up. I stepped out, and I came face to face with this being. He was dressed in a robe, in a blue tunic.
Mm-hmm.
With blonde hair, a little bit past his shoulders. And I said, hello. And he says, hello. I said, and you are? I am Adama. Adama is the high priest of Telos. He's the one that's in charge of the Inner Earth Agarthian network.
I think I met him last August.
It was a very, he stands about
very tall.
7-8 foot tall.
Yeah, I remember him now.
And okay. So, and as I was getting off, and the young lady was getting on, and as she was passing me, I greeted her, and she greeted me. And her name was Bonnie.
Mm-hmm.
And she was on her way to the surface.
Hmm.
So, at a later time, I'll tell you who Bonnie was.
Okay.
But anyway, so moving forward, they took me to the city, and I saw this dome city, and also see inside Mount Shasta. It's an ancient volcano, and the lava was rerouted around this dome, so it wouldn't affect the city.
Right.
And, of course, the city is underneath this dome. So it's like five levels. There's like five levels in Telos.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And what did you see when you were there?
Well, they took me early one morning in the astral plane, and I saw a beautiful city. Everything was white. And
yes,
everyone was dressed in these white robes. And
they love wearing hemp.
Yeah, they do. And it was like a, it reminded me, Billy, of a town in Switzerland where it was set on these beautiful mountain sides, and I could see lots.
But there wasn't no snow.
Oh no snow at all. Bright sunlight. And they were very friendly, and they said that the reason why they haven't come to the surface because we were too violent. And I can understand that.
Absolutely.
You know, they've got to protect themselves. But I felt very honored and privileged to be there. I did converse with them. I don't remember everything. But
right.
I think they were preparing me for my next step in my life, which was to raise consciousness and prepare humanity for this knowledge that they do exist.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And
even when several times, and when people are on walking on Mount Shasta, hiking, they get confronted by guides.
Right.
And sometimes they get in. These hikers get invited to go in.
Right.
So, and even that happens today. So.
Right.
you'd be surprised. You might go to Mount Shasta one day and end up getting invited there again in the physical instead of the etherical.
And that would be perfectly fine with me. I know they're very high vibration.
Sure it would be.
Beautiful.
I'm sure it would be.
Beautiful people. Beautiful
they
people.
They are. They're wonderful people.
Beautiful people.
And so you also notice they were all wearing headbands, too.
Mm-hmm.
And the headbands were made of copper with a gold disc and a quartz crystal.
Hmm.
And that's what they wore on their heads.
Now, the quartz crystal, I saw a picture. I have a picture of you with the same kind of headband. Does that...
Yes.
Does that... Billy, does that help open up the pineal gland?
It does.
Okay.
It opens you up the third eye.
Fascinating.
And it keeps it open.
Fascinating.
Yes.
Okay.
And, of course, also, we have a person, a friend of ours, that makes those headbands now, and she does sell them on her website.
I'd like to buy one. What's her website?
Of course.
What's
you can go to our website, which is hollowearthnetwork.com.
Hollowearthnetwork.com. Okay.
And go on the upper left corner. There's a whole list of subjects, and you'll find one that says headbands.
Okay.
Click on that, and it'll take you right to the page where you can order them from her.
Okay. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful.
And you can also order a healing rod as well.
How does
healing rods
mm-hmm.
are? They're copper tubes, and they have quartz crystal on both ends,
mm-hmm.
and they are used to heal people, and they do. They're very powerful.
Wonderful.
And these are devices that were used. By the Lemurians and the Atlanteans, but there's another version of it that is what you call a power rod. A power rod is only one end of the copper tube that has a quartz crystal in it, and then the other end is capped with a copper cap,
mm-hmm.
and it's wrapped in leather.
Okay.
That is what you call a power rod. It's a weapon. It's not a healing rod.
Hmm.
It's basically a weapon that was used in Atlantis when the factions would war against each other.
Mm-hmm.
But we won't go into that.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. Well, tell me what happened then.
What happened then was, after I had my visit with them, I was sent back to.
Go ahead, Billy. Are you there?
Oh, while I was there, we went down another. He says you're going on another trip, extended trip. So they put me in another shuttle, and this shuttle was aimed at an angle, down.
Okay.
So I said okay. So I got in this craft and. This thing goes into Hollow Earth. It went straight down through the crust of the Earth. The crust of the Earth is 800 miles thick.
Oh.
And, the crust of your planet is 800 miles thick.
Mm-hmm.
The center of gravity is located 400 miles under the Earth's crust.
Okay.
It's not in the center of the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
400 miles in.
Mm-hmm.
And it took from the time I left Telos to the time I arrived at the station in Hollow Earth at Shambhala, it took approximately 5.5 minutes.
You visited Shambhala?
Yes.
Wow, that's amazing. Please continue.
Oh, yes.
Wow, okay.
While I was there, I met my real parents.
Mm, mm-hmm.
Again.
Okay.
My mind had been wiped when I came to the surface.
Sure.
So I could fit in.
Sure.
And so it was interesting. But I met my real parents.
Right.
And, of course, they welcomed me with open arms, of course.
Right.
And father's 15 feet tall.
Okay.
And my mother's about 14 and a half. She's up there too.
Mm-hmm.
But they're perfect in structure. They're not fat. He's very muscular, but he's not fat. And she's very shapely, of course, for a mother. And pure, unmarred skin.
Billy, I hate to stop you right now, but we're ending toward the end of the first hour. And what I'd like to do is...
Hello, friends. That was the interview I had with Colonel Woodard of the former base commander of Area 51, and we'll be going on to the next hour now with a fabulous interview with his father from the Inner Earth. Please stay tuned, my friends.